From the Blue Ridge Mountains to the Chesapeake Bay, Virginia is a mecca for outdoor travel and adventure. Virginia Outdoor Adventures podcast is the ultimate guide for local outdoor recreation, including hiking, camping, kayaking, and so much more. Get the information and the inspiration to plan your own adventure right here in Virginia. I'm your host, Jessica Bowser. Embark on an intimate trek through Virginia's Appalachian Mountains with Ranger Beth Christensen of the Eastern Divide Ranger District in the George Washington and Jefferson National Forests. Beth's stories transport us from the jagged peaks of Dragon's Tooth, a jewel in Virginia's Triple Crown, to the powerful rush of Cascade Falls, one of the most beautiful waterfalls on the entire East Coast. Beth's insights into visitor information and preparing for a hike are golden nuggets for any outdoor enthusiast eager to explore responsibly. Whether you're drawn to the high-flying raptors at Hanging Rock Observatory or the soothing sounds of Dismal Falls, this episode is a heartfelt tribute to Virginia's wild heart and an open invitation to tread lightly, give back, and immerse yourself in the enchantment of these revered spaces. Let's go. Virginia Outdoor Adventures is sponsored by the Virginia Association for Parks. VAFP champions parks across the Commonwealth. Did you know our state parks are suffering from a multi-million dollar budget shortfall due to decades of underfunding by the Virginia General Assembly? Our legislators need to hear from park visitors and champions like you who care about the future of our parks. Join me on Wednesday, January 31st in Richmond for Parks Advocacy Day, hosted by the Virginia Association for Parks. As a proud member of VAFP, I will be leading a group of park champions and speaking with legislators about support for our state parks. Experience is not required. If you are new to advocacy, rest assured we will prepare you in advance and pair you with an experienced advocate. This is a half-day event with breakfast and lunch provided. This offer is limited to 30 participants and is first come, first served. Learn more and register by clicking on Parks Advocacy Day in the show notes of your listening app. I look forward to seeing you in Richmond. Beth, welcome to Virginia Outdoor Adventures.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here. Looking forward to engaging with you today.
What do you love about Virginia's outdoors?
What I love about Virginia outdoors is the diversity that the landscape provides in terms of all the different types of features that you can experience and find across the state.
What does the U.S. Forest Service provide the community, and what's your role within the Forest Service?
So what the U.S. Forest Service provides to the community is a pretty big question because there are many, many services that the agency provides in terms of recreation opportunities, timber products, forest products, wildlife resources. Work really closely with our partners, the State Wildlife Commission folks, ecological functioning, silvicultures, just making sure that we've got healthy forests. And then we've got fire. So prescribed fire, which helps to bring ecological health to the community as well. And then we touch many facets of the communities that we're in across the country. And what is my role? I am the district ranger of the Eastern Divide Ranger District of the George Washington Jefferson National Forest.
Beth, is it okay if we just talk about what that area covers? Because I think what I hear from folks is there's a lot of confusion amongst all the agencies in Virginia that manage the different public lands. So you're just one agency. But then, of course, there's like DWR, the Virginia Department of Wildlife Resources, has wildlife management areas. DCR has natural area preserves. There's the State Forest, Virginia Department of Forestry, which is different from the U.S. Forest Service. Of course, there's national parks, state parks, and that really causes a lot of confusion amongst people. And I often hear people calling all of the public lands parks, which isn't quite accurate. So can you tell us a little bit about how big the U.S. Forest Service is in Virginia and what area you're responsible for?
Yeah, that's actually a good question, because there is a lot of confusion, with all the different agencies and all the different partners and how we all work together, to provide not only physical services, but also ecological services to the communities that we're in. So the U.S. Forest Service is the agency that manages national forests, and they are located across the country. And in Virginia, there is 1.8 million acres that is managed as a national forest, and that's the George Washington and Jefferson National Forest. And my part of that 1.8 million acres is 405,000 acres, and we are based out of Blacksburg, Virginia, but we cover 12 counties. Our ranger district covers land in Virginia and then a very small portion of West Virginia as well. That's kind of where some of the definition comes in terms of the difference between a national forest and a national park or a state park or a state forest, or, even like the nature preserves with TNC, the Nature Conservancy. In the western part of the country, the national forests were reserves. It was the forest reserve system, and they were set aside as the country was being settled. And in the east, in Virginia, for example, they are what's called Weeks Act forests. So in 1912, the Weeks Act was introduced, and it is where the federal government would purchase land from companies or people, private entities. And once they would purchase the land, then it was managed as a national forest. And so that's how the George Washington and Jefferson National Forest was initially established.
So your district, the Eastern Divide Ranger District, you said is 405,000 acres, and your office is in Blacksburg. I got to visit your office not too long ago. There's a lot going on there. You've got a lot of wonderful resources for visitors. Do you want to just mention the counties that are included in your district?
Yeah, so we have a little bit of Allegheny County, Bland County, Botetourt County, Craig County, Giles County, Monroe County, West Virginia, Montgomery County, Virginia, Pulaski County, Roanoke, Smith, Tazewell, and Wythe County.
So, what makes your district unique?
I think one of the things that makes this ranger district unique is just the diversity of landscape that is across that 405,000 acres. So because it's such a big stretch over so many counties, there are facets to each of those areas that are truly unique to those areas. And so it's really interesting, either ecologically or culturally. It's just really impressive to see the differences and to see the interactions and to see what it looks like at the top of Dragon's Tooth, or what it looks like down in Bland County at Kimberling Creek. It's just there's just a wide variety of ecotypes and landscapes here. The other, I guess, unique thing about this ranger district is that there are 10 wilderness areas. And so those wilderness areas are managed differently than national forest proper, right? There's different stipulations that come with being a wilderness area, and those are dictated by the Wilderness Act of 1964.
Yeah, my understanding of wilderness areas is that they're supposed to remain untouched by humans for the most part. So, there's a lot of rules and stipulations around how to manage it. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's accurate. One of the things that has surprised me most, as I've moved through my career thus far in terms of having conversations around wilderness areas, is that there's even attention to detail on the type of screw or the type of nail that can be used on a wooden feature, that could be found in a wilderness area if there was one. Aside from that, there's also stipulations around, what tools can be used if there's management needed in wilderness areas as well.
Right. Like I was talking to somebody who I think does, I don't know if they were doing trail management or what, but they were telling me that you're not even allowed to use a chainsaw. You have to use a handsaw when like fallen trees have to be moved, away from a trail. Is that right?
That is accurate. Yeah. And, for instance, if we've had a wildfire in a wilderness area, we have to get special permission from our regional office to use other than hand operated tools. Any mechanized tools require special permission for sure.
Let's dive into the outdoor recreation opportunities that are in the Eastern Divide Ranger District. I'm sure hiking is a big one and hiking is super popular, but what other types of outdoor rec are available?
Definitely hiking. We have 150 miles of the Appalachian Trail, including the Triple Crown of the Appalachian Trail. So that's definitely on the board. But then biking, mountain biking is very popular along this part of the forest as well. And then, of course, we've got campgrounds and cabins, and we've got fishing and horseback riding and hunting, as long as people have their National Forest hunting stamp, and bird watching and nature viewing, of course, picnicking in some of our day use areas. And then we've got a lot of creeks for exploring. One of the other things that's really kind of interesting is that we've got some shooting ranges on this ranger district, one in particular that's pretty popular. They're both free, so they both garner public attraction. But one in particular, the Blacksburg Shooting Range, definitely gets a high level of visitation just because it's 5 miles outside of Blacksburg.
Yeah, I'm unfamiliar with target shooting. Do you want to describe what that is?
Yeah, so it's a bring your own target. It's just a space that's been dedicated for people to come, and hunters use it to sight in their guns before hunting season. If there's recreational target shooting that people want to partake in, there's a designated area for some of that. And that way, it kind of points people to a place where they can safely discharge their firearms. But it also, it's a concentrated level of use. And so that way, there aren't people just randomly target practicing in the forest. So that's kind of nice.
We don't want that. Where's the best place to locate maps and other visitor info?
So we have almost a little vestibule in our office that we try to keep open. It's, a little entryway, and we've got some maps. We've got some pamphlets of maps that are available free to people for some of our higher visited or highly visited recreation sites.
That's good to know. Cause the maps that you gave me, I remember you pulling them from near the front door, and those were like some of the best maps that I've seen. It's kind of tough sometimes to find maps online for the National Forest Service. I would recommend going to your office and getting the paper maps and keeping them and having them on hand, because they can be a little tricky to find online, or if you find them, you sometimes have to pay for them.
Yeah. The ones that we have near the front door are free, and we frequently reload those as they get utilized, because there are people, especially Virginia Tech is about 3 miles from our district office, and so we frequently have either students or alumni visiting, especially like on a football weekend, they're just looking for a map for this one particular rec site, and there's a pamphlet there, and then they're good to go. But we keep those stocked for sure, and they're free.
I want to dive into some of the specific areas within your ranger district. Some of them are really popular. I'm sure there are several here that people have already heard of. In fact, I think one of them might be one of the most popular hikes in the state. Before we get into these individual locations and individual hikes, I think we should have a conversation about any concerns that you might have as a ranger regarding the popularity of some of those locations. The whole reason why you and I first met was because I was speaking to a group of people about some overuse issues and overcrowding, and you were like in the back of the room fist pumping. Because I don't know how many people talk about these things unless you work either as a ranger or some other position within within an agency that manages public lands. But there's a lot going on right now, especially like within the world of social media, where somebody with a large following will put out a post about a certain location, then and all of a sudden thousands of people start flooding into that area. Of course, we want people to enjoy these areas, but also there are some consequences of overuse. So let's talk a little bit about some of those. Like, what have you seen as a ranger, or what concerns do you have regarding the popularity of these locations?
I was reflecting back on that first conversation where you were, you know, speaking to that large group talking about that concern. And yeah, I was like the first one to stand up and start clapping for sure, because it's this fine line of wanting to share all the great things that are out there, but also wanting to manage these areas so that they're not trampled and impacted. And then also, you know, still providing for not only the management, but then also the safety of the visitors and of the employees, right? And so there's all these confounding factors that go into these popular areas, which I couldn't be more proud. And I know that my staff, they have a lot of pride in taking care of these areas and of this landscape, because there are so many things to love and because there is so much uniqueness. But part of it is balancing the use that some of these areas receive and trying to figure out ways to work with the public or work with the partners or work with a volunteer group to make sure that things are in place or that things are happening to help to support the sustainability of these areas over the long term. And that can provide to me some challenges, you know? And so that there's part of that. I think of it like balance or a puzzle, you know, trying to make it all work.
Online, we often see this referred to as gatekeeping, not sharing information so that people won't go visit. But that's actually not what this is at all. This is something completely different. We want people to visit, but we want them to do it responsibly. So what tips would you give folks to make sure that they are visiting responsibly?
I think about, you know, some of the conversations that we have had thus far in terms of wanting people to get out there, wanting people to enjoy it, but then also wanting to leave it in a sustainable manner. And so that kind of comes into the planning and the prep that we talked about in terms of what people can do when they start to think about where they might want to go. Specifically, I'm thinking even just about Dragon's Tooth, where we've identified this sensitive plant location, and we've put up ropes to help to discourage people from camping in the sensitive plant location. And it's not that we want to say, you know, the National Forest is not open to dispersed camping. That's not it at all. If you're going to be planning your visit, know that the sensitive plant area has been identified, and try to think about where else you could potentially go if you want to camp for the night, because your reverence is our reverence. We're happy to help to take care of these areas as well. It takes a village, right?
It takes a village, it does. And I think that just goes back to making sure that you're prepared so that you don't have to rely on the village to come and rescue you, right? Like when there's a situation. And that's another interesting point too. People often think about trash, but there's way more about this than just trash, right? And it's about sensitive vegetation. It's about, overusing the trail. It's about invasive species taking over where a lot of trampling of the natural vegetation has gone on. It's about contaminating waterways, endangering wildlife, disrupting wildlife. But then also, if you have to be rescued, like let's say somebody wants to take a 5 mile hike, but they start out at 4 p.m. with no water, right? Or they don't have a map, then they put themselves in a situation where they have to be rescued. And usually it's 911 that gets called first. And that means that it's the surrounding communities that have to respond. And then it's taxpayer dollars that fund those resources that go into rescuing you. And then there's the volunteers that have to be called to come rescue you. And then, of course, the agency is involved as well. And so a lot of resources go into getting people out of situations that could have been avoided. And I'm certainly not suggesting that if there's an emergency, you shouldn't call for help. Absolutely, you should. But if you plan ahead, a lot of these situations can be avoided.
There is a lot that goes on behind the scenes to respond to a need of a forest visitor in a national forest if that arises, for sure.
A visit to the New River Valley of Southwest Virginia isn't complete until you've explored Pulaski County, home to two Virginia state parks. Clater Lake State Park has been my base camp for visiting attractions all around the New River Valley, including college football games and local hiking and biking. The park's waterfront cabins are a personal favorite, especially the lodges. You just can't beat the views of the sunrise and sunset overlooking the 4,500-acre lake from a rocking chair on the lodge deck. It's tough to pick a favorite state park, but New River Trail State Park is at the top of my list. This Rails to Trails 57-mile linear park follows an abandoned railroad bed and parallels the scenic and historic New River for 39 miles. The trail's gentle slope makes it great for visitors of all ages to hike, bike, and ride horseback. The latest addition to the New River Trail State Park is Hoover Mountain Bike Complex. The 4 miles of colorful scenic mountain trails are located on a site that used to serve as a mining area for Hoover Color Corporation. I never miss an opportunity to stop for lunch or an ice cream at the Village Coffee Shop at Draper Mercantile when I ride the New River Trail through the historic town of Draper. Interested in lodging right on the trail? New River Retreat offers cozy cabins and home rentals along the New River Trail, as well as on Clater Lake. Other lodging options include the Jackson Park Inn, situated in the heart of downtown Pulaski, with dining on site, or opt for historic charm at the Bellhampton Luxury Farmhouse, where the owners will be excited to welcome you to the farm, just as they have done for me. Start your adventure in Pulaski County. Click on Visit Pulaski County in the show notes of your listening app to plan your visit. Shall we jump into the specific hikes and locations?
Please do.
Yes, let's do this. Okay, I really want to start with Pandapus Pond Day Use Area because you introduced me to this area. I had never heard of it before. I am so glad you took me there because it's absolutely gorgeous. What can you tell us about Pandapus Pond?
It is a very lovely pond that has a walking trail around the pond and then 26-mile trail network immediately adjacent to the pond. It's about 5 miles outside of Blacksburg, and so it's very accessible to many members of the community and many recreators. And when I talked about communities having reverence for places, this is one of those places. And it's got an amazing story that I think contributes to that reverence. Mr. Pandapus owned the first electrical company in Blacksburg and wanted somewhere for his employees to be able to walk and exercise. And so he dug the pond. Then he built the walking trail that was around the pond. He had it for many years and then transferred it to the Forest Service in the 1960s. I guess the intent around the transfer was that it would be made available to everyone for free. And so that's what it is. It's a beautiful area that is a flat trail around a pond that is open to everyone. You know, we get stories from the person who walks their dog there every day to the high school mountain biking team that practices there many times a week to the volunteer group, the mountain biking volunteer group who helps us with trail maintenance there. So it is loved for many reasons by many people. And it's beautiful.
I loved this area. You and I went for quite a long hike through the trail system before we even got to the pond. Now, you can, I think there's easier access to the pond area, but you and I took the long way around because you wanted to show me the trails through the forest. We walked to the wooden blind near the pollinator garden, and that was really beautiful. You could sit inside of the wooden blind and look out over a meadow. I really loved the pollinator garden. It was one of the biggest that I've ever seen. Is it volunteers that manage that?
Yeah, it's actually Master Naturalists. It's
oh,
a group
nice.
Of volunteer Master Naturalists, and they do an amazing job upkeeping that area. And it's a native plant garden as well. So it's just a really nice feature.
Yeah, that was beautiful. And it was just a lovely stroll through the forest before we got to the pond. What I remember seeing at the pond was just a lot of wildlife, right? Like dragonflies and turtles and songbirds, some ducks swimming. And even though it was raining that day, there were still plenty of people out. I mean, we were out in the middle of a weekday in the rain, and there were people walking their dogs, couples going for a nice stroll. I think you told me that people have stories of getting engaged there and other things. Yeah, I could see where folks would go there for that because it's really beautiful.
Yeah, definitely. You know, we hear stories all the time. So Pandapus Pond was actually a recipient of Great American Outdoors Act funding. There was a story done about the work that was completed through that funding. And when the story went out, like externally, we received many, many responses from people across the country. You know, one story came in from Mississippi who said, "Oh, my wife and I got engaged there. We love Pandavis." And it was like, good. I'm so glad. Yeah, we're trying to take care of it for you. And I think all of that use contributes to that reverence and to that care and to that pride as an asset to the community. And so, yeah, it definitely is a well-loved treasure.
All right, let's move on to another location. This is someplace that I've not been here yet, but it is on my list. I really, really want to go here, especially during fall migration.
Oh,
and that's
yeah.
The Hanging Rock Raptor Observatory. Tell us about that.
Yeah, the Hanging Rock Raptor Observatory is actually a pretty cool little place. If you can imagine almost like a little cabin. It's a one room little cabin on top of a mountain. And there is probably about a 1 mile trail. So it's a 1 mile hike up to this beautiful overlook. And it overlooks Virginia and West Virginia. It is known for being a wonderful place to watch bird migration. We work really closely with the Virginia Department of Wildlife Resources to help do the counts. So they do the bird counts, the population counts, and you know, just with the staffing of the observatory itself. It's only staffed for a few weeks a year. You don't need it to be staffed to go. It's open to anybody at any point in time. It's a really, really cool spot.
Yeah. So I imagine the staffing is probably for hawk watch in the fall, right? When
yeah.
they actually count the migrating birds.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
That's really cool. So during the Hawk Watch, anybody can walk up there and join. And I would assume the staff would be helping people learn to identify some of the raptors as they're passing over. Is that right?
Yeah, and there's usually binoculars up there, but part of the planning and the prep, if you want to go up there for bird watching, I'd plan to bring your own set. I've been up there a few times where I didn't even have binoculars because it was just taking in the views and taking in the sights just to watch the birds catch the wind currents and soar and float, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that there's a 360-degree view of the surrounding area. This observatory has a reputation of being really awesome because you're like almost at eye level with the birds as they're flying by. Like, if anybody's been to the Hawk Watch, like let's say Kitptah Peak State Park, they have a Hawk Watch and there's a platform. They're on the eastern shore, so they're on sea level, and the birds are so high up that you need a scope and or binoculars to see them, and then you almost have to have a trained eye to know what you're seeing as it's going over. Whereas like Hanging Rock, my understanding is the birds are just passing by like right over you. It sounds so cool.
And like I said, it's a 1 mile hike. I've seen many young children do the hike, so it's a very, very cool spot to be able to bring a variety of different people. And yeah, you're right there with them.
That's cool. Do you know where somebody can find out what time of year or is best, like when the staff will be up there in the fall?
We work closely with the Virginia Department of Wildlife Resources, and so folks could call our office and we could have our biologists coordinate with them, and then we could give them a call back, or the Virginia Department of Wildlife Resources would also be able to answer that information.
Let's hit location number three, which is Dismal Falls Trail. And I understand that this is a really good hike for families.
Yeah, this is a really wonderful family hike. This is a waterfall that flows all year round, but I can imagine some wonderful, wonderful Saturday afternoon where it's very, very warm and this water is just flowing and it's very easy to get to, very accessible. It's literally steps from the pull off. There's a designated pull off. It's widened part of the road. You literally just walk down and it's all right there. It's fantastic. This is one that I can envision an amazing July or August Saturday afternoon just hanging out in the water nearby.
I completely agree. The falls itself is a 15-foot staircase of rock ledges in Dismal Creek, and there are really large rocks at the bottom of the falls that you can sit on and dangle your toes in the water, enjoy a picnic, and just hang out for a while. So it sounds like a really nice place to go if you need, a short, somewhat easy trail.
There are places there also immediately around the falls that are shallow enough where you could just kind of sit and let the water rush by.
Okay, so that was a quick one. That's good because the next two are the most popular hikes. I think we're going to be talking about these two the longest. So the first one we kind of have already referenced, and that's Dragon's Tooth. And Dragon's Tooth is part of the Triple Crown, right, on the Appalachian Trail. I did this hike the day after that you and I met and did Pendappas Pond. Oh my gosh, so many people, but you know that, right?
I do.
So, what do we need to know about Dragon's Tooth if we want to hike it?
Yeah, so Dragon's Tooth. There is a reverence also for Dragon's Tooth, but it does get a lot of visitation. So it is one of the jewels in the Triple Crown. So it's McAfee Knob, Dragon's Tooth, and Tinker Cliffs. And McAfee Knob is managed by the Park Service. The Forest Service manage Dragon's Tooth, and Tinker Cliffs. Both agencies, the Park Service and the Forest Service, work very closely with the Appalachian Trail Conservancy to help manage these areas. And honestly, the number of volunteers that the Appalachian Trail Conservancy can call together or that routinely call together, we couldn't do it without them. We could not do the management or the implementation of management with Dragon's Tooth without the partner, the Appalachian Trail Conservancy. They have been tremendous. Yes, it is a rugged hike. It is a popular hike. Please don't come at 4 o'clock with sandals and no water to start your hike. It's beautiful. It's another beautiful, beautiful location.
Yeah, describe the tooth itself. Why is it called Dragon's Tooth?
I think Dragon's Tooth, I would think of maybe an inverted shark's tooth, where the point is at the top. And some people say that they haven't hiked the whole trail until they've hiked to the point of the tooth.
Oh my gosh.
But that is it's a very, very daunting point. But people do it, and that's fine. A prominent feature of the Appalachian Trail is the tooth itself.
Yeah, it's just like a giant rock jutting out of the ground up into the air. You'll be coming down the trail and then you look up and you're like, well, you can't miss that because it's just a massive rock sticking straight up. And to get up it takes some rock scrambling. Not a ton of rock scrambling, but it's a little tricky. I can't believe that some folks go all the way up to the point. Like, it's a little nerve-wracking. It's tough to get up there. If you mess up and you fall, that's a really big drop. But yeah, even the guys who are up there are like, if you want to try to get up there, we'll take your picture, but we have to warn you, it's pretty sketch. I got maybe partway up and I was like, yeah, I think I'm good enough right here.
Yeah, I mean, it really is like when you're at the top of the tooth or where you're on the tooth, like that is it. There is nothing else around you. And so it definitely takes a little bit of courage if you have a fear of heights. I don't know that I would recommend going all the way to the top of the tooth, but
that's right.
It is beautiful.
Right. But there's plenty of other rocks to sit on, all around it. And how about the views, Beth?
It's gorgeous. It's gorgeous. And it's just right outside of Roanoke. So that is a very accessible hike for people who live in Roanoke to be able to just get out onto the National Forest 20 minutes away. It's about 45 minutes away from Blacksburg. So it's not too far for the community.
Because it is a steep hike up. I think that's maybe what fools people is that it's a short trail, but it's a steep trail. And that's why it takes so long to get to the top.
It is. It's a little misleading, but there is definitely a rock ledge that's a little treacherous that you have to navigate.
It is a beautiful location at the top. And it seems that it's also popular for sunsets because as I was coming down, I was passing people who were still going up and carrying blankets and chairs and things like that. So I hope those people had a headlamp to get themselves back down because you definitely need a headlamp to get down.
Bag.
Yeah,
or a sleeping bag.
Yeah, I didn't see anybody carrying a sleeping bag though. I did see a lot of people camping where the trail intersects the AT. Lots of tents. I mean, I counted them and I think there were over 20 tents.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so that's actually that area is called Lost Spectacles Gap. I'm glad to hear that that's where you saw the tents because between the parking lot and Lost Spectacles Gap is where the sensitive plant species are. And so we've been trying to work with ATC and work with the public to get the information out to get them to not camp in the sensitive plant area. And so we've encouraged the camping at Lost Spectacles Gap. And actually, I'm glad to hear that you saw folks up there.
Yeah, lots of people. I assume that they were section hiking because it was already October. I don't think they were through hiking the whole trail, or they'd be really far behind. But yeah, lots of people, backpacking on the ET and spending the night there. And then the only other thing that I would mention to folks, maybe you have something else too, but cell phone service, not great. And when I got back to the parking lot, there was none at all. So luckily, I knew how to get from the parking lot back to I-81. So that wasn't a big deal. But for anybody who's trying to plan ahead or isn't familiar with the area, you're going to want to make sure you have your directions before you get there.
Yeah, that's a really good point. There is definitely no cell phone service at Dragon's Tooth, and that can be problematic for folks sometimes.
Would you hike 18 miles to some of Shenandoah National Park's most iconic locations to grant the wish of a critically ill child in Virginia? Since 1987, Make-A-Wish Greater Virginia has granted more than 5,800 wishes in our local Virginia communities, including 167 wishes granted last year. That's a lot, but with a pipeline of nearly 300 local kids with critical illnesses waiting for their wish to be granted, it's important to support this amazing organization. That's why I've registered to be a part of Make-A-Wish Greater Virginia's Trailblaze Challenge, where I've committed to hiking 18 miles through Shenandoah National Park and raising $2,500 to support wishes being granted to children and their families. The Trailblaze Challenge Hike Day is on April 13th, and all hiking participants will stay at Skyland Resort in Shenandoah National Park, with free lodging and meals for the weekend of April 12th through the 14th. Together with Make-A-Wish Greater Virginia, I invite you on this journey filled with adventure, camaraderie, and devotion to Wish Kids and their families. Learn how you can join me in participating in the Trailblaze Challenge by clicking on Make-A-Wish Greater Virginia in your show notes. Registration closes January 31st. Can't join me for the hike but still want to show your support? Contribute to my fundraising page by clicking on Contribute to My Trailblaze Challenge in the show notes of your listening app. Last one I want to cover, and this one is even more popular than Dragon's Tooth. And this is the one that very well may be one of the most popular hikes in all of Virginia, and that is Cascades Day Use Area.
I feel like I want to go, woo! Please.
I mean,
Please
it
laugh.
is a wonderful, wonderful hike.
Beautiful. It's a beautiful waterfall. And again, comparatively, it's pretty easy to get to. There's the stream trail that you utilize to get there. That's 2 miles one way. But it's pretty rocky, right? And it's a little more up and down. But it's not, you're not crossing any rock ledges or, your dog could make it. There wouldn't be really any treacherous spots. And then the other access to the falls is a fire road. It's a gental incline of a road that leads to the falls. And so, if your knees are a little sore or your ankles maybe couldn't take all the rocks, there's still a way for you to get to the waterfall. And there's a I don't even know how to describe it. Maybe 500 foot, almost pool, right? It's not 500 feet deep, but there's a almost a 500 foot space of water before you get to the waterfall, and people swim at their own risk, not encouraged by the agency, of course.
The waterfall itself is 66 feet, I believe.
Yep, it's a year-round attraction. We get calls in January or February asking if it's frozen, and people are always trying to catch that or to photograph that. There is a steady flow of visitation, which is a good thing, but also working to implement some management so that the site itself doesn't get trampled or just worn down.
Do you know offhand how long the trail is? Not,
Generally, 2 miles one way.
yeah, not super long. Just long enough that it makes for a very pleasant morning or afternoon. The trail that you mentioned that runs alongside the stream is breathtaking, even way before you get to the falls. There's rhododendron and mountain laurel and big rock boulders. It's a great location for trout fishing. There's plenty of pretty footbridges that cross over the stream. I mean, really, it's picturesque no matter where you look. Even if there was no waterfall at the end of it doesn't matter because that hike is so pretty. Because it's so popular, there's a lot of people. What's the best time, do you think, to hike this trail and maybe avoid some of those crowds?
Yeah, if it were me and I had a very flexible schedule, I would say a Wednesday at 1 o'clock, you know, but I also know that sometimes that's not really reality for people. There are a few things that come to mind in terms of some of the busy times. Of course, the weekends, the summer weekends, and then even like the home football game weekends for Virginia Tech. It's listed as there's a bucket list that Virginia Tech produces, and it's I think 72 things to do before you graduate. It was on that bucket list of things to do. So there is a steady flow of visitation that is directed, which is great. But I would say, you know, the earlier in the day that you could start your hike, the better. You know, I've been there at 8 o'clock on a Saturday morning, and there were already 40 cars in the parking lot. It's all about, I guess, coordinating your schedule with maybe coordinating with bigger picture schedules that you may be aware of in terms of like, well, if you know that it's parents' weekend, maybe that's not the best Saturday to go to Cascades. But if you can go next weekend or if you can go on Wednesday, you'll probably have a better time, you know, just because there won't be the mass of crowds of people that you'll
Yes,
see.
I wholeheartedly agree with that because when I was considering spending the night so that I could do those two hikes the next day, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to deal with the football traffic. And then I checked Virginia Tech's schedule and realized it was a bye week. And I was like, oh, sweet. I don't have to deal with the traffic. But I think what instead I ran into was a lot of people weren't going to the football game. So what were they doing? They were
Oh,
going on hikes, right? So I did run into a very crowded parking lot. And this is a day use pass area or a fee area, correct? Like what are the fees?
Yeah, so right now the fee is $3 per vehicle. We have an automatic fee machine actually placed at Cascades that just went live. We are now able to accept credit cards for payment instead
Yay.
of people having to have $3 cash. And so that was a really, really huge accomplishment for us. I say that because it literally did take 3 years from start to finish to get that little fee machine in place. And then the other thing is, you know, part of the conversation is, yeah, it's $3 for your whole vehicle, which isn't that expensive at all. But we, because of the level of use, our own employees can't keep up with the cleaning and the maintenance and the trash and the mowing. You know, we have partnered with Giles County and they really help with the trash removal at that site. And then we have our own recreation folks who take care of the site. But then also on top of that, we have a cleaning contract at that site that helps with our bathrooms because of the level of use, we're not able to weekly keep up with the cleaning of the bathrooms on our own. So we have to supplement that. And so then again, it's another behind the scenes thing, and another cost, right? That comes with the level of visitation. We're looking to increase the fee, to $8, but we're waiting. We've got to go through our regional office fee approval process, and we've not completed that yet.
I know there's a lot of mixed feelings about this. I recently put something up on social media that has the fee-free dates for national parks for
Oh, yeah.
2024, and
Yeah.
some folks got into debates in the comments section about whether this should be free to everybody all the time. Other people saying we need to support our parks, so and our parks need the money. There's a lot of perspectives here. There's not a right or a wrong one, but I do want to point out that if you have the annual National Parks Pass, the America the Beautiful Pass, doesn't that get you into this area for free?
Yep. And then there's also, there's a National Forest Pass. So the National Parks Pass and then the National Forest Pass and then the Seasonal Day Use Pass as well. Yeah, I mean, you're right. There's not a right or wrong answer. And people leave us messages on their fee envelopes all the time, and some of the gems we save, but for a few weeks,
I would
but
love
some
to
of,
go through those with you one day.
yeah, but some of the gems, you're like, dang, man, like toilet paper costs money. I'm sorry, like if
Yeah.
you want a clean bathroom, we have to pay for
Yeah,
it.
it's a constant debate, and the restrooms at that site could use some upgrading too. I mean, they're old and they definitely could use some upgrades.
Well, and also, one thing, aside from Pandapus, this site actually was the recipient of Great American Outdoors Act funding as well. And so we're working with our engineers, our facility engineers, to identify what the needs are. I could tell you that it needs new toilets, but I'm not an engineer, and so I can't say, well, okay, and then you have to do this size water line and all this, so we're waiting for some of those specifics to be identified. But then, yeah, that's this site is gonna receive some major facelifts here in the coming years and months.
Awesome. I can't wait to see it. That'll be great. But in the meantime, it remains one of, I think, the most stunning waterfalls in Southwest Virginia and a very popular outdoor recreation location.
Definitely.
Virginia's Mountain Playground awaits you in Giles, home of Cascade Falls. Hiking opportunities abound in Giles with over 50 miles of the Appalachian Trail that passes through the county seat of Parrisburg and the town of Narrows, which are official Appalachian Trail communities. For those who want to venture off the beaten path, Dismal Falls is one of my favorite hikes to a 40-foot wide series of small but beautiful falls into a single whirlpool. The best accommodations in the New River Valley are in Giles, with Mountain Lake Lodge, Lily Valley Inn Bed and Breakfast, a variety of quality rustic cabins and historic inns. Visitors have a wide range of comfort to choose from. Mountain Lake Lodge, a historic property and backdrop for the film Dirty Dancing, is situated on a 2,600-acre woodland preserve with hiking trails to scenic vistas. Soon to be the home of the brand new Giles County Trail Center, the facility will connect visitors and residents to natural and cultural assets throughout the New River region. The trail center and new 4-mile loop trail to Bald Knob will make the highest point in the New River Valley readily accessible to hikers of all skill levels, as well as access to more than 20 miles of other trails on Mountain Lake property. Giles is proud to partner with the Eastern Divide Ranger District to welcome you to Cascade Falls. I would agree that Cascade Falls is one of the most beautiful waterfalls in Virginia and possibly on the entire East Coast. 150,000 hikers visit Cascade every year. We thank you for doing your part to ensure we preserve this Virginia treasure for generations to come. Start planning your visit to Giles by clicking on Visit Giles in the show notes of your listening app. If anybody wants to visit your ranger district and let's say they show up at Cascades and the parking lot is full, or they want to do Dragon's Tooth and the parking lot is full, are there any other locations in your district that you would recommend? Because there are, what, hundreds of trails throughout your district.
Yeah, so our ranger district has over 500 miles of trail. And certainly, we have 27 designated recreation sites on this ranger district. We can certainly suggest some immediately adjacent areas that could still meet their needs or their wants. It doesn't maybe necessarily have the notoriety. There are some stunning views that we can still suggest if that's what people are looking for, or even some stunning hikes or mountain bike rides or horseback rides, whatever the request would be. I'm sure that there would be something that we could accommodate. And then the other part is, this is one of six ranger districts on this national forest. So there are certainly other areas that could fit the bill that may be closer to either where they live or where they're traveling to that we could suggest for them just to enjoy their national forest.
So it sounds like what you're saying is people should do their homework and get maps ahead of time and have a plan B in place.
Yeah. Or, even. We've had several people call who are like, I'm not sure what my plan B could be. Can you help me? And yeah, we're certainly able to help kind of formulate what some of those contingency plans could look like.
You mentioned earlier that Virginia Master Naturalists were responsible for that beautiful pollinator garden. Are there any other groups that volunteer regularly with the Forest Service?
Oh,
Maybe
yeah.
somebody could volunteer through them.
Yeah, so one of our other big partners is the Poverty Creek Trail Coalition. They are tremendous at helping us with our trail system. When I talk about having 500 miles of trail on this ranger district, we also have 35 employees. And
Wow.
they don't all work in recreation. We very much rely on our volunteers and our volunteer groups. And I mentioned earlier the Appalachian Trail Conservancy. They have trail clubs up and down Virginia that people can find one that's nearby to them and figure out ways to help volunteer on the management of the Appalachian Trail, or also, like the Dragon's Tooth Trail, while it's not the Appalachian Trail, it's an official side trail to the Appalachian Trail. And so, because of it being an official side trail, the Appalachian Trail Conservancy can also work to improve or maintain those trails as well. So, I would say for us in this localized area, the Appalachian Trail Conservancy and the Poverty Creek Trail Coalition are some of our other major partners and volunteer
Good.
groups.
That's great. And in your district, wouldn't it be the Roanoke Appalachian Trail Club?
That's right. Yep. ROTC. Yep. And
Yeah.
then we also have PATH, the Piedmont Appalachian Trail Hikers, is the other Appalachian Trail Club that we work closely with. Because we have so many miles, we span those two clubs.
There are lots of volunteer opportunities for anybody who might want to pitch in and give back or pay it forward. So, Beth, as we wrap this up, I'm sure listeners are going to want to know how they can connect with you. What's the best way?
Yeah, so we have three main ways that folks can get in contact with us. We've got our phone number, which is 540-552-4641.
And that goes
We've got
directly to your Ranger District office in Blacksburg.
That's correct. Yep.
Okay.
And then we've got the National Forest website for the George Washington and Jefferson National Forest. And that is www.fs.usda.gov/GWJ. And then we've also got an official Facebook page that is the title is US Forest Service dash George Washington and Jefferson National Forest.
I will put links to those in the show notes so listeners can find them. Thank you for being a guest on Virginia Outdoor Adventures.
Yes, thank you for having me. I'm so glad we could work together on this.
So am I. The next time I'm down in the Blacksburg area, I'll be sure to stop by and maybe we can go for a hike.
Please do. That sounds amazing.
Awesome. Thank you, Beth. Adventure on. Links and resources from this episode are in the show notes of your listening app and on the website at virginiaoutdooradventures.com. If you enjoyed the show, help spread the word by sharing your favorite episode with friends or on social media. Leaving a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts also helps new listeners discover the show. Get news and information about outdoor adventures close to home by signing up for my newsletter. Click on Newsletter Sign Up in your show notes or visit virginiaoutdooradventures.com. I love hearing from my listeners. You can find me on Instagram and Facebook or email me at jessica@virginiaoutdooradventures.com. Thanks for listening. Until next time, adventure on.